From SDPB Radio, I'm Chris Loffrey, in for Lori Walsh this week, and you're listening to In the Moment. And welcome to this week's Arts and Lifestyle podcast. All right, we have a music-packed arts podcast for you this week. To start us off, Spooncat. No Cover, No Minimum begins a new season this Saturday night on SDPB-TV with a landmark concert recorded in Sioux Falls. It's the first ever concert from Levitt at the Falls to air on television, and it features a South Dakota favorite with Sioux Falls roots, Spooncat. As a preview to Saturday night's episode, we've welcomed in a collection of people that are at the forefront of this partnership, waiting to see the fruits of their labor come to the screen. Nancy Halverson, Executive Director of Levitt at the Falls, John Hegg, member of Spooncat, and Kevin Patton, SDPB producer and host of No Cover, No Minimum, joined In the Moment. SDPB Steve Zwemke has more.
Let's start, Kevin, with you. What season is this coming up now for No Cover, No Minimum?
I believe this is our 14th season that we are in. And that includes from the very beginning of the program, which started in the early 1980s, I believe.
And have you been at this from the beginning, Kevin?
No, not from the beginning. Okay. The original program started in the early 80s, and I believe it was Tom Dillon and Pete Eggert were the producers of the of the early show, and they had about five seasons, and then the show kind of went on hiatus, and I kind of resurrected it in 2007, and so I've been doing it ever since 2007.
All right. Nancy Halverson again from Levitt at the Falls. The upcoming episode of Spooncat has to be, in a way, kind of a bow on the 2019 season, getting to sit back and see the fruits of everybody's labors just come to fruition. Give me your impression on the first year at the Levitt.
You know, it's been remarkable, and really I am so grateful to SDPB for being a part of it. We knew we had that beautiful big screen there, but we didn't know how important it was going to be until, you know, 5,000 people showed up on the lawn for Spooncat, and we really needed to have that big screen going. So having your team out there, multiple cameras, the live experience was that much enriched. But now to be able to play it back and see it again and share it with people who couldn't be on the lawn is just, like you say, it's a bow.
For listeners that don't know where we're located, our Sioux Falls studio is actually right across the street from Levitt at the Falls.
So we're neighbors.
Yeah, during the afternoons, there are a lot of times this summer where all of a sudden we're sitting at our desk and the music just starts blasting away and we get to hear the sound check. That was really special for us.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it and didn't upset your business.
The gas bill was on me. As long as you come film it, I'll cover the gas to get across the street.
Perfect.
John, we've talked a lot over the past few months about SDPB's relationship with Levitt at the Falls, which we have enjoyed so much. Talk about Spooncat's place in this partnership and seeing this project through to the end.
You know, it's fun. When I first got the email asking, you know, would you sign the release? Can they come record this? I said, yes, if we can have the tracks individually to play with this a bit, because have it be fun, have it be really clean. You know, you can't fake a live recording when you can see what's going on. So you just want to make sure what was going on is hopefully articulate and clear to a point to have it be the broadcast a little bit more respectable, I guess, in that regard. Yeah.
One of the things we want to do today during this segment with everybody is feature some music, and we are grateful for the opportunity to do this on today's program, John. We're going to play anyone from your set at Levitt at the Falls. Do you want to set this up for us?
Just a fun, it's got a little bit of a reggae feel, but at the heart of it, it's just a good old it's a good old song we've been doing since the very early days, and it's always been one of my favorite.
Yep, this one will be featured Saturday night on No Cover, No Minimum. Again, that starts at 10 Central, 9 Mountain on SDPB-TV. And again, from Spooncat's performance at Levitt at the Falls, this is Anyone.
Thank you. anyone who calls me. I am searching for the someone who will listen to me. I don't know if I crumble down, or will I be of even passing interest later on. I'm gonna see all things just as they were meant to be seen. Clearly, there ain't things gonna be so clear. I'm gonna live forever captured in the morning. Anyone, anyone can save me, even if it's just by looking deep inside your eyes. That is what I'm after. I am searching for that somebody who loves me. That is what I'm after. I can't wait to find you anywhere.
That's a Spooncat original, Anyone. John, let's give due where it is due. let's go ahead and mention all the members of Spooncat. We want to make sure they get noticed here.
Driving it all in the rhythm section on drums, Derek Hengeveld. On bass is our middle brother, Jason. Guitar, a good friend of my brother Jeremy's growing up, Christopher Smith. Obviously, Jeremy and I on keyboards and singing, and then horn section, Rich Hastings and Joel Sonicson on trumpet, Ryan Hofer and John Birch on the saxophones.
We were just talking during that song. These guys seem to know what they're doing.
We all had fun. And the nice thing is, after quite a long break of not having it be a regular thing, everybody's had it in their lives in some way, so it's not too hard to assemble it when you need to.
Yeah. John, with a project like this, an important one where the performance is going to be on TV, how did you choose the set list for this one?
Oh, boy. I'm not even sure, because we let Jeremy do that. and I'm sure there's a methodology to it. I usually am just make sure I know him and play whatever it's called up. Obviously, there's a good chunk of, you could probably predict in advance if you were in the band to go, I know half of these are going to be in there, because they're just kind of our go-tos, mm-hmm. especially if they want to be featured. But the rest is, you know, how might it fit? How's the arc of a show if you've got, I mean, we did a few nods to Train songs in the middle of this, because our sponsor had indeed come from a train company and whatnot. So what's the arc of the show? When do you want a slow song to come? When do you need to keep the energy up? And what are the best examples of that to try to get in the hour and a half or so that you have to do it?
We want to have some more conversation, but we need to get another song in as well. And we're going to play a song called Come. You want to set this one up for us, John?
Just a really great tune. There's an intensity to it that I've always really enjoyed, both in the structure of it, chord-wise and whatnot, and just the hopefully the performance pulls it. It's one of the more prideful moments I think we have as a band of coming up with it and how we play it, and I'm glad we found room for it in this show.
Yeah, recorded live, Levitt at the Falls, just a few short weeks ago. This has Come from Spooncat.
Your hand. Do not be afraid.
No one is sure of Ludwig van Beethoven's exact birthday, but he was baptized on December 17, 1770, in Bonn, Germany. Another certainty is that being 2020 will constitute his 250th birthday, many classical musicians are going to celebrate. The Jupiter Quartet is getting a head start, putting on a show presented by the Black Hills Chamber Music Society on September 29th at the First Congregational Church in Rapid City. Cellist Daniel McDonough joined us to discuss the quartet and Beethoven's influence on classical music.
Let's talk a little bit about the Jupiter Quartet first, because this is a pretty tight-knit group. Tell us a little bit about the group, please.
Yeah, well, we've been an ensemble for almost 17 years now, and a string quartet with two violins, a viola, and a cello, and three of us in the group are related. So Meg and Liz are sisters in the ensemble, and I'm married to Meg, so Liz is my sister-in-law, and that just leaves Nelson, who's the first violinist, and he's unrelated to us. But, you know, when you're playing with somebody every day for 17 years, they become a kind of family member in their own way. So it's a very close-knit group that we have.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Beethoven. And to set that up, we have just a snippet from String Quartet in F major, Opus 135. This is from the second movement. Just a taste there of the Jupiter Quartet coming September 29th, brought by the Black Hills Chamber Music Society. And Daniel, tell me a little bit about sort of the standard repertoire for a string quartet, and how does Beethoven as a composer fit into that?
Well, I mean, what you just heard was the last piece, the last string quartet that Beethoven ever composed, and the last of the late quartets, his so-called late style. And we'll play in Black Hills, we'll play the first of the late quartets. And the late quartets of Beethoven are like the holy grail for string quartet musicians. They're just very deeply felt works of art, beautiful, enigmatic, mysterious, and very personal works for Beethoven. I mean, he was doing things that were way ahead of his time. And even today, they can be sometimes puzzling to audiences, but they're works of art that continue to challenge us as musicians and I think speak very deeply to the human experience. So to be able to celebrate his birthday with some of these late works is a wonderful thing. I think that they represent kind of the best of what Beethoven was able to do in the last part of his life.
There's clearly technical mastery that needs to happen, and as you mentioned, the collaboration. But I'm wondering how you approach the relationship that you have as a group with the composer. Are you trying to translate, you know, as clearly what his intentions were? Are you trying to interpret it for today? How do you sort of look at those little dots and lines on the page and say, we want this to be this in the world? Do you have conversations like that?
Oh, all the time. I mean, that's one of the most wonderful things about the rehearsal process is sort of talking about what we feel the music is communicating. Of course, we can never know. I mean, maybe someday I'll get to ask Beethoven what he actually meant by some of these markings. But we have this score in front of us, and we do our best to kind of hear the music and relate to it emotionally. We use a lot of words to try to communicate what we would like the music to make the listener feel, and then we talk about how we're going to do that through sound and tempo and all of the things that all of the tools that we musicians have. So, yeah, it's a big process. You know, how do we come to what we feel is the most kind of honest and true interpretation of what we can never really know?
Thank you.
South Dakota is no stranger to public art on a monumental scale. From the four presidential faces on Mount Rushmore to the Dignity Statue overlooking the Missouri River, these pieces become part of the state's broader identity. But the same can happen on a smaller scale. SDPB's Jackie Hendry shared with us the story behind a mural in Vermilion and the people who made it happen.
In the alley in downtown Vermilion, a wall now holds color and meaning where once there was only brick. A Native woman with a determined expression is breastfeeding two infants. Waves crash behind her on either side. A star quilt design is behind her head like a halo. An eagle spreads its wings to rise above the water. The mural also includes two young women tugging two ends of a rope. They reflect cultural realities. One is dressed in traditional regalia, the other in contemporary dress. The mural is vibrant with yellows, reds, and blues. Just ask Shannon Cole, executive director of the Vermilion Cultural Association.
It doesn't matter what time of day it is, whether it's sunset and the light is coming through the alley or it's midday right now, like with a shadow on it, the paint is always bright. It always is sort of glowing off the back of the building, and I think that that's just really remarkable.
The Vermilion Cultural Association is a nonprofit that promotes the arts and cultural exchange in the area. It supports a local mural project with fundraising and grant applications. Cole says public art adds both economic and social value to a town. She says it lifts people's spirits and can make them want to stay.
And that's an important part of why we developed the mural project, because we felt like that was something our organization could add to Vermilion.
This isn't Vermilion's first community mural. Another, finished in 2017, sits just around the corner. USD painting professor Amber Hansen has guided both projects. She says when community art is based on shared stories and ideas, it helps connect residents to their public spaces.
So traditionally, you know, this is a trained artist who's working with a group of people to guide that process so that the work of art and the thing that's created can be, you know, monumental in scale and can be as complex and hopefully as, you know, relevant to the people who are part of that process.
The artists behind this project are Reyna Hernandez, Ink Pomani, and Liz Skye, all young Native artists from South Dakota. They brainstormed ideas and researched ways to create a safe creative space for members of the community who wanted to participate. Amber Hansen explains the design meetings were open to anyone and included a variety of group activities.
We created poems together, we drew pictures together, we told stories together, and all of those ideas were collected and compiled. And then Reyna, Inkpa, and Liz created a composition inspired by those conversations and the themes that emerged from those workshops.
The conversations looked at personal identity. When April Madsen learned the new mural would portray Native women, she knew she wanted to be involved. April is Lakota and Alaska Native. She lives in Vermilion with her two young daughters.
As they are going to school and saying things like, my skin color isn't the same as theirs, like, I'm brown. And just being like, yes, you are.
During workshops for the mural project, Madsen says some conversations helped her consider her own struggles dealing with identity. She says she often tried to fit in with majority culture instead of embracing her own traditions.
Just saw a lot of harm that came from that and becoming more disconnected. And so I just really wanted to become more connected to my own traditions and, you know, being an Indigenous person and what that means, and so that I can teach my daughters.
After the workshops, the artists merged the images. Ink Pomani found a picture of a breastfeeding Native woman. Reyna Hernandez found a Japanese print of a wave of water. She also brought in one of her mother's star quilt designs. As they began combining the images, Ink Pomani realized it was a representation of the Dakota creation story, a flood that destroys the world with only one survivor, a woman saved by an eagle who gives birth to twins. Lead artist Reyna Hernandez says it was an emotional moment.
Everything felt very connected and universal and right. And at that moment, I really did. I felt like this is the story we're supposed to be telling and we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Then came the next challenge, presenting the design to the entire community. Amber Hansen says in a public art project, this can be a vulnerable point for an artist.
There's uncertainty in how people are going to receive that image and the information contained within it.
But the rest of the design team loved it. Over several days this summer, Hansen says there were people all over the wall with paintbrushes creating the image of a mother with her back to the waves. April Madsen and her daughters were there. She loved seeing the colors going on the wall.
You know, the colors that we're painting are very indigenous colors and, you know, brown skin. And it was just really overwhelming and emotional and, like, beautiful.
The city held a dedication ceremony for the finished mural late last week. Janae Porter is a senior painting major at USD and worked on the mural. She says the community collaboration is meaningful to her as a student.
Because in a university setting, you're not always connected with the community that you live in outside of campus. And so I think that's a really good merge to have students help the community and see where they're living and kind of get to know the area that they are in for 4+ years that they're here.
And for artist and USD student Liz Skye, this mural was a way to claim her space in the community. As a Native woman who didn't grow up on a reservation, Skye identifies with two characters in the mural, one woman dressed traditionally and the other in contemporary clothes. Skye wants this mural to make space for Indigenous women who express themselves differently.
Creating an academic space where I can be contemporary, do the things I do, listen to the music I want, and create the art I want, and still be Indigenous, and still be powerful and honorable and respectful and respected. There's no reason because I wear a belly shirt or because I don't go to Sundance. There's no reason I can't learn my language or be a part of it.
And she is learning her language, which helped her find the perfect term in Lakota to title the mural.
And Kiche too. It means to become all right again, to be restored. And the final interpretation is to come back to life.
It's a metaphor for reviving traditions. But artist Ink Pamani says the mural is also a reminder to the rest of the community.
And especially being right next to Town Hall, it was a prominent place where they could come in and see that even though you don't see Dakota people surrounding these landscapes, our bones are buried within this land.
Ink Pamani says the mural stands for generations of Native women who first walked this continent. Liz Skye hopes when visitors see the image of a Native mother breastfeeding her babies with the waves crashing against her, they're astonished by her strength.
And I want people to know that Native American women, no matter how misrepresented, no matter how much violence and is like imposed upon us just for being who we are, no matter all of that, we are still going to survive.
The mural has a message that's already speaking to the next generation. April Madsen says her daughters are a good reminder.
I mean, there's a 20-foot tall woman with two babies. So that is definitely like the part that resonates with me the most. And my daughters are like, is that you?
And while this mural is finished, there's still more to come. The Vermilion Cultural Association is now working to raise $13,000 for a continuation of the mural. They hope to start painting next May. Lead artist Raina Hernandez usually works alone in a studio, but she says this process has helped her understand the value in public art.
To be at this point where I'm at now, to understand that these stories, the ones that are unheard, are important for everyone, is something that I don't think I fully realized when we started this project. And so I'm really excited about finishing the other half and telling the rest of the story.
In an alleyway next to Vermilion City Hall, a mural tells the story of women forming the past, claiming space in the present, and looking to the future.
Let's howl at the moon, howl at the moon, don't you want to? Why stop at the moon? Let's throw in sun and stars and planets and the clear blue too. Maybe wild dogs could keep us from the path we picked to go at all along. So what if we can't beat them? Who said we needed roads to go back home? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Start moving slow. I'm a Vincent.
Don't you want to?
Star moving soon.
We'll check the streams and breathe the wind to find our food.
Tamer Dante kept us from doing what it is we want to do.
There's not a
law that can keep us
cooped up
from being wild and free.
Rough and Tumble is a folk Americana music duo. They released a new album, Howling Back at the Wounded Dog, earlier this month. This weekend, you can see them under the South Dakota skies in Hill City, Rapid City, and Hot Springs. This is the last time you'll see them in South Dakota until next year, so plan accordingly. The duo is known for their rich harmonies, innovative instrumentation, playful storytelling, and unforgettable lyrics. They travel the country in a camper, collecting stories, sounds, and pocket-sized instruments. They joined us from the SDPB Rapid City Studios for Moment in Sound.
We are thrilled to have you. Tell us a little bit about your sort of traipsing through South Dakota, because you've been to Brookings and Yankton and Gregory and now a few more dots on the map.
Yeah, we've just had a great time. We've been here just over a week, and we camped in the Badlands a couple nights ago, and got to visit some friends over in, on the eastern side of the state. It's been wonderful. We love South Dakota so much.
We do. We come back every year. We were asked, I think, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, to play over at Prairie Berry, and I think that's how they hooked us. And so we've been coming back every single year since.
All right. So give people an idea of how exactly you travel.
We are. I guess 4.5 years, almost 5 years ago, our landlord in Nashville left us without heat for 12 days during an ice storm. And so we decided enough was enough. And we sold everything we owned and we hopped into a 16-foot camper. And we live in there. We've been living in there for 4.5 years with now 2 large dogs.
Yeah. That's not a lot of space. 16 feet is not a very big camper. If you're trying to put that visually in your mind, it's pretty tiny.
It shrinks every day,
yeah,
I think.
As the dogs get bigger. What has been the advantage of that, though, musically? I mean, you're a couple, so there's relationship challenges and opportunities there. But musically, what has sort of living in that small space together and being on the go, I shouldn't say on the go, but on the move, really.
Yeah.
How's that changed you as musicians, as a group?
You know, it's allowed us to get to smaller communities. It has allowed us to do this, on a, like, every day. You know, we're out on tour, and most people living out of their cars during, for their tours, they kind of have to make it back to whatever city they're from. And living in a camper has just allowed us to really explore the country and get to know different people in different communities, and it's been great for us as people, great for us as a band too. It's just been wonderful.
You can play Gregory, you can play Hot Springs.
Exactly.
Those aren't necessarily stops on very many people's tours. Yeah.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about this new album, Howling Back at the Wounded Dog. Is it a departure for you? It is a continuation of a narrative. How do you sort of see this particular release?
Interesting. Yeah, I would say it is. I would say it's a continuation. I think we've kind of just been rolling this way. I think also to how has living in a small space contributed to our songwriting? It's kind of required us to be more honest, because you can't, at least for us, we cannot live in that small of a space and not be completely honest, because it becomes maddening to try and guess what the other person is thinking. And you don't have a lot of wiggle room to, you know, just kind of walk away from it. And so I think the last record we put out was definitely starting to walk toward this amount of honesty. But then this record, Howling Back at the Wounded Dog, I think we sort of landed. And I think we landed in a way that was thoughtful, but also honest, and but not honest to the point of, you know, taking a lot of jabs. And yeah. This record also came after a really long year of loss. We lost a lot of things within a year. One of our best friends, and also we lost our road dog Butter, and it was just kind of a tragic year for us internally. And so we started to howl, like literally started to howl, to try and alleviate that sense of loss. And what ended up happening was, I guess, the universe or whatever it was started howling back at us. And so it was a wonderful coming into our own.
Yeah.
Let's hear a song. What would you like to play sure. for us first?
Yeah. We're gonna start off with the opening track from the album. This is called The Hardest Part.
Well, the hardest part is over. The hardest part is over. Yeah, the hardest part is over. Till the next hardest part. I was named for the struggle. Weight shifting, arms lifting, strong and hitting what's not coming. You named for the road. Yeah, the hardest part is over. The hardest part is over. Yeah, the hardest part is over. Till the next hardest part. There's a porch light waiting here. Yeah, the hardest part is over. The hardest part is over. Yeah, the hardest part is over. Till the next hardest part. You can promise me never if you promise me forever. Oh, oh. Never if you said we'd be together. Oh, 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 I'll never hurt that way again. I'll never hurt that way again. I'm not still standing here for nothing. Stripping, eyes flicking, calling shots and making ultimatums. Don't let the road rise up to meet you. Don't let the road rise up to meet you. You're not still standing here for nothing either. Yeah, the hardest part is over. Yeah, the hardest part is over. Yeah, the hardest part is over.
The hardest part is over, yeah, the hardest part is over. Till the next hardest part, yeah, the hardest part is over. Till the next hardest.
You know, as we mentioned before, we just love South Dakota and have been coming here for a number of years. And so we wrote this song. It's called South Dakota Skies. And, you know, we have this great camping spot.
We like to call it a secret camping
spot. because we're not exactly sure
if it's legal.
Yeah, right. If it's legal to park there. But it overlooks the Pactola Reservoir. Sure. You know, here in Rapid City. And
we started going there our very first year in the camper. We came out to South Dakota. It was sort of the first thing on the list when we got the camper was we have to get out to South Dakota. And so we found a spot there, and it has been sort of a place that we've watched storms come in. We've watched lightning strike a far mountain. We've you know, watched sunrises and sunsets there. And it's kind of just this place that we go in our mind anytime we're a little feeling like we don't belong anywhere, which is easy to do when you're in our position. But I also think it's easy to do for anyone, even if you have a home that's not rolling around the country. And so South Dakota Skies is a song sort of just taking you back to a place that feels like you belong somewhere, even if it's just for a minute.
Yeah.
Meet me at the reservoir.
Meet me at the reservoir.
Meet me at the reservoir.
Sunflower and buffalo flying by with miles to go. Gotta get away from where we've been. Badlands up around the bend, they're not so bad with you, my friend. Black hills will be rolling through in time. You and I'll take a South Dakota sky. Any other moon be wasted if it tried. I had my eye on your Pennsylvania smile, hazy from a West Coast night. I found my light beneath that South Dakota sky. California stars be wasted if they tried. Something green, for the prairie calls us again. You and I might have a Carolina mind, but that moonshine couldn't keep us if it tried. All our days will end too soon beneath that South Dakota moon. The coyotes singing out.
The Rough and Tumble on today's Moment in Sound. You can find their music on Bandcamp and Spotify and Apple Music. Go to their website, theroughandtumble.com, to order CDs or go out and see them in person. They're at Tally Silver Spoon in Rapid City tonight and Minor Brewing Company in Hill City tomorrow night. All the dates are also on that website. Also, I highly recommend following you on Facebook because you do a version of that song out under the South Dakota sky for your... Tell us a little bit about this sort of production that you do. What's it called?
It's called Double Americana.
There we go.
And it's something we do every Wednesday at noon on Facebook. And we thought it was going to be this really hilarious coffee joke. We figured people would be taking their coffee break, around right. that time.
Instead of getting in a double Americano, they get double Americana. Yeah. But we keep having to explain the joke, which is how we can tell it's a really good joke.
Right. and tell us, in this last Wednesday, really, there's a lot of instrumentation, and you could hear some of that. Careful listeners to the radio are kind of hearing different things happening in the studio there. You can see it when you're playing live. Tell us a little bit about how you add different instruments to the mix.
Completely on accident.
Yeah.
No, when we first started this group, I played a little bit of guitar and a little bit of piano, but I was terrified of playing instruments in front of people. And so Scott suggested, instead of playing instruments, I would just be doing sound effects, which sounded reasonable at the time. But fast forward 3 years, and all of a sudden I was surrounded by a toy piano and bells and an accordion and drums. And I kind of realized one day while we were playing that I had been tricked. And so so we kind of accumulated. We started making these homemade shakers out of wine bottles, and we just found these different sounds that could kind of illustrate what we were singing instead of just going forth and having a sturdy backbone of a song with a couple of voices. We really wanted to kind of draw people in visually as well, because we both work visually as well. And so people start giving us stuff, and it's becoming
a
real problem.
That is the problem we have.
Right, because the 16-foot trailer comes into play here. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I actually, I got a spare accordion once in South Dakota, and 3 weeks later, some lady in Albuquerque gave me another accordion, so I'm now like three accordions too many.
Yeah. All right, well, will you play for us next, please?
Yeah, we're going to do a song called High Fly, Didn't I Wait? It's all about springtime, and we wrote it. We spent November in Vermont, which was very cold and very snowy. And
we don't have to tell South Dakota that.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. You guys know what November is like, or what May is like, as we understand it. And so we just were just waiting for spring to come. And so this song is kind of all about the maple trees waking up, and it's called High Fly, Didn't I Wait?
High fly, didn't I wait? Didn't I wait? Hawk in the meadow and a robin on the gate. Oh, fly, I didn't I wait? High fly, didn't I wait? Didn't I wait? Hawk in the meadow and a robin on the gate. Oh, fly, I didn't I wait? All through the winter waiting for the ice to break. Oh, fly, I didn't I wait? Now I'm just a river running, looking for a name.
High fly, didn't I wait?
High fly, didn't I wait? Didn't I wait? Hawk in the meadow and a robin on the gate. Oh, fly, I didn't I wait?
Mud is rolling down over the mountain with the rain. Oh, high,
didn't I wait?
Barely filling up, but I've been looking for a change. Oh,
high fly, didn't I wait? High fly, didn't I wait? Didn't I wait? Hawk in the meadow and a robin on the gate. Oh, fly, I didn't I wait? And I've been waiting for the day to break. Are you on your way? Didn't I wait? break. I've been waiting for the day to break. I've been waiting for the day to break. Sugar in the branches and sugar in the veins.
Why didn't I wait?
Slugging 40 gallons for a bucket full of taste. Oh, didn't I wait? Sugar in the cupboard and sugar for the weight.
Oh, why didn't I wait?
Why didn't I wait? Didn't I wait? Hawk in the meadow and a robin on the ghetto. Fly high, didn't I? High fly. High fly. Oh, I'm not waiting for the day to break. I'm not waiting for the day to break. Oh, I'm not waiting for the day to break. 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 Oh, I'm not waiting for the day to break. Didn't I wait?
And we'll end the show this week with some poetry from Studio 47, featuring the work of South Dakota-born Bruce Roseland.
This is poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Bruce Roseland. Roseland was born in Faulkton, South Dakota on November 5, 1951. He grew up on his family's ranch, and after completing high school, he went to South Dakota State University, where he majored in sociology. Roseland transferred to the University of North Dakota, where he received his BA. He then went to study for an MA, also in sociology, and also from UND, which he received in 1980. After being away from the family ranch for so long, Roseland decided to return to Seneca, South Dakota, in order to run it. In doing so, he became the fourth generation of his family to work the land. Roseland is known as a cowboy poet, which means that his topics often include observations about ranching life. Most cowboy poets usually worked with a fixed rhyme scheme. Their topics are often realistic and grounded in nature. I find the term cowboy poet limiting and even marginalizing. For me, good poetry is good poetry. Perhaps there is a snootiness in American culture, a snootiness that says the world of agriculture can't create good art. We could certainly have a very rich discussion about this, about how art from the Midwest and the West is usually considered not as important as what is being created on the coasts. That, however, is a discussion for another time. Roseland's books include The Last Buffalo, A Song for My Mother, A Prairie Prayer, and Cowman. He has won the Wrangler Award from the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum, as well as the Will Rogers Medallion Award. In fact, he has won this award twice. He lives in Seneca, South Dakota. Today's poem is titled Moonshine. After telling you that cowboy poets usually use strong rhyme schemes, Roseland doesn't. In fact, he writes in free verse, and most of his poems are a single stanza in length. What I really like about our poem for today is the topic. I've lived in a number of cities in my life, Chicago, London, Belfast, Barcelona, and while I love these places, I'm always reminded of the light pollution that blots out the stars. Being away from the city, being in the prairie or in the woods, means seeing the night sky anew. The sky is absolutely salted with stars, and a full moon can illuminate the darkest field. As Roseland reminds us, we lose something by being in our big, bright cities. This is Moonshine, by Bruce Roseland. There is always something mystical about a sky lighted by moonshine. Stars are present, but gentler. Clouds floating across the night sky are a translucent white. The moonlit earth can be traveled about without need of any additional light. I have stood in the middle of my yard and read a newspaper by moonshine. When was it that we became afraid of the dark, like death, hiding in our cities of light? In doing so, we lost that half of the night that is moonshine. With the full moon upon the countryside, it's easy to imagine walking out, striding over the land, disappearing into the shadows to find the mystery that you know has always been on the very edge of your life. Find a road. Follow the moonshine.
Poetry from Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks.
All poems used with permission, recorded at Augustana University and produced by Peter Folliard. Thank you for listening.
That's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us. Looking for an individual segment from our radio program? You can find all of our segments at listen.sdpb.org and on our daily podcast, In the Moment Segments. The In the Moment podcast is produced by Josh Heyer. Follow Lori Walsh on Twitter at @MomentSDPB. Have a story idea? Send an email to inthemoment@sdpb.org. For Lori Walsh, Josh Heyer, and Steve Zwemke, I'm Chris Lawfrey in this week for Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.